Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
The song of the day today. Welcome to Central Standard Time. And you should have, as Cher put it so well, turned back time. 1 hour. Live from Los Angeles this morning, where it's 2 hours earlier than that. It's Dean Richards. Good morning, everybody. Nice to have you with us here today.
7:09 your time, 9:09 on the dot here.
You sound like a train conductor. Shawnee checking his pocket watch. Yeah, by jingy, the
Omaha, Albuquerque, and Cucamonga.
What is that from?
Cucamonga. I don't know.
And Cucamonga.
Cucamonga.
That's from something, isn't
it? It's from a movie or a show, yeah.
Movie.
I have
or,
to check that out.
It's got to be, if Shawnee and I know it, it must be from something.
It's very old.
Something black and white. And Cucamonga.
Cucamonga.
Was that an I Love Lucy? No.
It might have been. Might have been.
Did a couple of episodes on a train.
Yep.
Was it an old-time radio show?
Yes, I think it might have been Jack Benny or one
and
of those.
Cucamonga.
Yeah.
Where's Carl Amari when you need him?
I know, exactly.
Where's Chuck Shaden when you need him?
we'll find out.
Chuck,
we'll find out. Someone will text us or call us and let
somebody
us know.
Somebody will connect and let us know about what that's about. We'll figure it out before next week. I'm racking my brain for the big special show we're doing next week.
Can't wait.
I'm very excited.
I'm preparing, too.
I know you are. I know you have a special... far-flung forecast.
That's right.
For our special broadcast that we're going to do next week, next Sunday morning at Tree Time Christmas Creations in Lake Barrington.
I've had the song stuck in my head for a month now.
The Tree Time jingle?
Song? The jingle? Yep.
That is by design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is by design.
Something tells me, I don't know why, I need to go get a tree for some reason.
I wanted to look up the exact address of Tree Time so I can mention it on the show today. And I couldn't remember. You'd think I can because we've done the show there so many times.
Pepper Road.
It's on Pepper Road, but the numbers are unusual. You know, it's not like 2833. There's letters and numbers involved in their address. So I had I wanted to look it up, and I was like, what's Tree Time's website? Oh, yeah, I remember now. Treetime.com.
On Pepper Road in Lake Barrington.
In Cucamonga.
It's 22102 North Pepper Road.
You beat me to it.
Yeah, 22N North 102 Pepper Road.
South Boulevard.
What?
No, 22102 North Pepper Road.
I have 22N102.
Mm-hmm.
Are you on their website?
Yeah.
Go to their website, which is
treetime.com.
And where it says directions, you scroll to the bottom, it says directions, you go there. And that's where I saw it. Maybe I'm wrong.
22102 North Pepper Road. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Does that say that on their website?
It says it on the Google Maps here, yeah. 22102 North Pepper Road.
Google Maps. You kids and your Google Maps.
Yeah, Swanee.
Kid. I'm not the kid here.
Okay, show her.
But that's what it is.
Well, wait a second.
22102 North Pepper Road.
Okay, this is on their website, on the Tree Time website. 22N102 Pepper Road.
Okay. We'll go with that then. Well, I'm looking at the map here. And
Sam's not satisfied.
I don't believe them.
It's on their website. I'm not making it up.
Just look for the big Christmas store on Pepper Road.
I didn't plan on spending 10 minutes on where the N goes in there. Look, if you put Tree Time into your GPS and you'll get there. That's how I do it every year. You can pretty much just put tree time, and the GPS finds it and knows where it is. That's how it all goes. But we'll all be there next week. And imagine being able to not only listen to but watch scintillating conversation like this. Like, where does the end go in a street address?
And all coming up with different answers from different web searches.
You think it's exciting to listen to this when you're actually out there and be able to watch us all be on our phones and or computers looking all of this up. It's thrilling. This is, people talk about, the great radio broadcast, Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, FDR's Fireside Chats. And us looking up addresses on our phones.
We're in line for a Peabody.
That's what you want to come and
watch.
We're
in line for a Peabody.
At the tree time. And if that's not enough, Elton Jim Toronto, you know how they cut they're putting the decorating the tree in Millennium Park, the official City of Chicago Christmas tree. Turns out Elton Jim Toronto is going to have the exact same decorations on his Christmas jacket.
He'll bring his brooch, too.
He is bringing
it's a festive pin.
It's a brooch.
And he's by the way,
he's already sent me several notes that I should call it a festive Christmas pin and not a brooch.
By the way, if you peruse the website,
he's not letting this go.
The website.
Is this more about the address?
It's not only that, but you will actually see a listing for us, November 12th, live,
right?
WGN Radio remote broadcast from Tree Time. It's always a party.
That?
Yeah, it says it's always a party. Look under the events link on their website. It's always a party when WGN Radio's Dean Richards visits. Join us and see what surprises Dean has in store for us this year.
Party when Dean visits.
That's what it says.
Weren't we in Aurora when they forgot the S at the end of Richards?
Yes.
Dean Richards. Dean ran out of S's.
They spelled my name wrong on the marquee. They didn't run out. They spelled it wrong. They had plenty of S's. Yeah, they did. I can't find the events section and don't really want to spend 20 minutes right now.
But would you like a new Sacramento spruce?
When I was looking at their website, I was thinking this would be a good segment for next week. Know your Christmas trees.
There you go.
Do you know your spruce from a
fir?
Douglas fir?
From a Douglas fir.
No.
All right. I'm not sure how that's going to work on radio because you really sort of have to see it.
Yeah, well,
I figure we can kill 10-15 minutes with that.
We can, radio being theater of the mind, we can do, descriptions of all of this.
Right.
So we'll go with that.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk with, we love the people at Tree Time, so we'll, we're going to talk with them about what's new and, new in decorations and decorating ideas and all that, but we've already got some fascinating segments already planned for the show. Last week, we had brought up that we're going to do a segment called Know Your Melons.
And you remembered, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we're
going to do it.
We're definitely doing it. Know Your Melons. I can't wait. That's going to be the highlight of the show this year. The Know Your Melon segment's going to be the highlight of the show.
I will come prepared.
What do you mean?
I will know my melons. I'm going to be ready for this.
You're studying?
Yeah.
So you're going to spoil.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to spoil the whole thing.
He has a melon cheat sheet.
I may have to disqualify you.
Okay, then I will recuse myself.
No, let's do this without, you're not going to win a trip to Tahiti, Schwani. It's the definition. I'm thinking that we're going to bring in audience members. Mostly. Of course, we'll participate also. But we'll invite audience members to come and not only sample, but, we'll have several different kinds of melons and see if people know which melon is which.
Sounds good to me.
This is quality broadcasting we're planning for next week.
Right. Name that melon. Know your melons.
Name that melon. Know your melon. And, because the holiday baking season is on us, I thought, in one segment, we would do another segment called Know Your Nuts. Because people are baking.
Oh, they'll look at us sitting right there. They'll know we're nuts.
That's strictly because It's holiday baking season. And do you know a filbert from a Brazil nut? I don't think most people do. This will be the educational portion of the program next week. So those are just two things that we have. Oh, yeah, we've got live entertainment.
No, you're nuts.
Also.
Oh, anything could happen there.
You just got that, didn't you?
Yes.
You just got that. I love that. We also have two of the stars of the Marriott Lincolnshire's latest production, Newsies. They're going to come and perform for us. We're going to have some Christmas carolers out there with us next week as well. We've got lots of entertainment. As I mentioned, all of us, all of you, the audience members make up a big part of the show also. So it's all going to be at Tree Time Christmas Creations, which is, as we all know, 22N102 Pepper Road.
Whatever you say.
Lake Barrington. You can go to WGNradio.com for events. Oh, we've got tickets. We're going to be giving away tickets to the Carole King musical, Beautiful. We're going to have giveaways. Lou Malnati's is going to be out there with us. They're going to be passing out pizzas.
We should try and get Carole King to come.
Okay, let me put that on the list.
All right.
I'm sure once she hears that we're doing Know You're Nuts, that she's
going to
want to be.
She'll definitely make it a priority to
be there and be part of the whole thing. That's all next Sunday morning out in Lake Barrington. We hope you can join us for that. Hopefully you are wide awake at 9:23 Central Standard Time. Time for our Sunday morning sports preview. Andy Mazur joining us on the phone line. Good morning, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Dean. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Should we just briefly start off with these Northwestern Wildcats? Third consecutive game overtime now against Nebraska, 31-24.
Yeah, they're the first team in FBS history to win three straight games in overtime. So it's pretty interesting how they're doing it too. I mean, Clayton Thorson actually ran in for a touchdown late to tie the game, and then they score from the 1 yard line on their first possession in overtime. And then again, the defense comes up big and prevents Nebraska from converting on a 4th and 11 to even have a chance to tie it again. So, I remember back when Pat Fitzgerald was playing back in the mid 90s when they would call them the Cardiac Cats, and now they're calling them the Cardiac Cats again. And for good reason, because this is a team that seems to save its best football for the second half and into overtime.
I didn't hear the game yesterday because I was traveling. I was in the air. But did Dave Enick go nuts? Was he screaming like crazy the way we love?
Yeah, Sam played it at the top of the hour. And, Dave obviously lives and breathes Northwestern, and rightfully so. You went there and you walk up to the booth at Ryan Field and his picture is on it. The Dave Enick broadcast booth. So yeah, he's got a little bit invested in it. I think he got a little excited at the outcome of that game.
Look forward to playing that again later. Bears are on a bye week this week, so let's move on to the Blackhawks, who were winners last night, 2-0 against Minnesota.
Yeah, coming off back-to-back shutout wins for Corey Crawford, his 22nd and 23rd career shutouts, and he has been basically the guy that's kept them in it, because the offense still not exactly where they'd like it to be. They did score on the power play yesterday and got an empty net goal to kind of clinch it late. But the offense has sputtered a little bit, and these last two wins can probably be classified as Goldie wins. And Corey looks like he's on his game. So back-to-back shutouts of the Flyers and now the Wild. So a big 2 points. To pick up in the Central Division. And tonight, they're back at the United Center, an early start, 6 o'clock at the UC against their original six opponent, the Montreal Canadiens.
Very good. And, Bulls were losers last night to, New Orleans. 96-90 was the final score.
Yeah, that was in overtime too. And, the Bulls really had some chances late in that game to put it away. Robin Lopez had a couple of cracks at the basket and was not able to get the ball to go. And then New Orleans just kind of took over in the overtime session yesterday with that 96-90 win in overtime.
Very good. And let's see, what else do we have going on here today? I saw some of the Houston Astros were on Saturday Night Live last night with Leslie Jones during the weekend update schedule. They're making their appearances. on the late night shows and the late night comedy shows. And I guess the Cubs sent some congratulatory pizza to the Astros for their World Series win this week, huh?
Yeah, that's a tradition that I was not even really aware of. The previous year's World Series winner sends 200 pizzas to the front office of the new World Series champion. I didn't think it was deep dish. It looked like a thin crust kind of delicacy there from Chicago to Houston.
So, no, they sent it from that team's town. So they sent pizzas from Houston to Houston, if that makes sense. You send the pizzas from the winning team's town.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's not a Chicago delicacy. It's more like they call somewhere in Houston and send it to the Astros.
Right, Fuzzy's Pizza in Houston.
Okay, that does not sound appetizing whatsoever.
Fuzzy's.
Yeah.
I do not want anything fuzzy associated with my pizza. That's a terrible name.
That's why they put those little plastic tables in there, you know, so to avoid the fuzzies on the pizza.
That's a terrible name for a pizza chain.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool little tradition.
So wait, this is a tradition, and it's always pizza. It's not pizza because people think that Chicago is the pizza capital of America?
Yeah, apparently it's always pizza, yeah. So it's an interesting little tradition, and the Astros front office got to enjoy some Fuzzy's pizza.
Again, that does not sound appetizing at all. And how did we not know about this tradition? You guys have never heard of it. I never have. I mean, I know we haven't been in the World Series in 108 years prior to last year.
That's probably why. And it didn't get a lot of coverage in 05. Because a lot of people and big major news outlets forget that the White Sox actually won it in 2005, so maybe that's why it didn't get covered.
Who knew the pizza tradition? Well, we've learned something.
Well, it started in 2014. Yeah, I learned that yesterday. So it's
recent. It's only a few years.
It's not a long-standing tradition, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a long-time thing.
All right, so it's not like somebody was sending Babe Ruth pizza or Ty Cobb.
Yeah.
So it would have been the Red Sox sending pizza to the Giants.
Right.
2014, okay. Yeah.
Well, nice tradition. Hopefully they find someplace other than Fuzzy's to send it.
Yeah.
We've got too many other good choices for pizza. Forever young. 9:47, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. As we'd been talking about a few minutes ago, a business here in Chicago celebrating their 95th anniversary is always quite a special event. But Southport Lanes in Chicago, 3325 North Southport, it really is a special place. In the last couple of days, they have been throwing a 95th anniversary party there. Steve Sobel is their owners and is with us this morning. Steve, congratulations on this big event.
Thank you, Dean. Good morning. I wish I could say I was around for the original opening, but that was a long time ago.
I'll bet you have people popping in who were original customers. Might come by and have a Schlitz at the bar.
Sure. Well, actually, it's funny. We have four lanes which are handset by pin boys or pin people, however you want to call them. And I can't tell you how many times people come in and say, I used to set pins here for, a nickel a line or a dime a line. And that's great. It's great that we've been around for that long.
Yeah. Talk to me a little about the history of Southport Lanes.
Sure. Well, Southport Lanes was actually built originally at the turn of the last century by the Schlitz Brewing Company. It was one of the tide houses. And they built probably 8 to 10 different bars around Chicago to sell Schlitz beer. That became against the law, and then with Prohibition starting, Southport Lanes was really founded in 1922 when the lanes were put in, and then it became sort of a house of ill repute. Like many Chicago speakeasies, there was a brothel upstairs, and if you go into Southport, there's still the original mural above the bar, which sort of gives a hint to what's to come if you go upstairs and enjoy the place. And
you use them now for special events upstairs, now, right?
No. Upstairs is actually our office. It was the people we bought it from, actually Leo Bites, It was he actually grew up in that apartment, so he said they took away all the indications of what was going on upstairs.
All the remnants,
growing up,
of different kind of special events that were going on upstairs. Yeah,
exactly. And in fact, there's still a dumbwaiter. If you behind the what we now use as the shoe cabinet, there's a dumbwaiter that is still there. And still can work, and that was how they got the drinks up to the girls and their clients.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So a different time.
That's hilarious. And this was a hangout, as I understand it, for then Mayor Anton Cermak as well, right?
That's correct. There was when we got in there, there was a secret room right in the front of the building. You didn't even know it was there, but Leo, when he showed us around, he said, yeah, that's where Anton Cermak used to hold a weekly card game. Which was great. And then in the back of the building is more of the crazy history of Southport. There was a new building built in the 40s that was an off-track betting facility. We found 100 phone lines, and Leo again told us what was going on back there.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love these, Chicago history stories of businesses and places like this. You go someplace and you sit down and a bartender starts telling you stories about what used to happen there, 75 years ago, and who used to frequent the place. But the bowling alley, I think, for Southport is definitely one of the things that makes it so special. The bowling alleys came in what year?
1922,
and were virtually the same as they are right now. I'm sure there must have been a temptation by some owner through the years to let's modernize this place and get rid of the pin people who are back there manually resetting the pins, right?
Absolutely, but it's such a critical part of our identity and what we are all about. And also it's a piece of history, and I think people really enjoy that. And when they come into Southport Lanes, they're going to see how the game of bowling really truly started. So it's really special.
Yeah. So describe that behind the scenes and what's that like back there for these? Do you have, I imagine you have more than one person resetting the pins, even though it's only four lanes.
Yeah, we actually have two back there at all times. It's really, really hard work, actually. And there's a reason why machines have been put in. But there's one pin chaser for both, or pin setter for two lanes. And our motto is, if you see legs, don't bowl. It can get pretty dangerous, but it's hard work. And they, I'm so glad that we still have people that are willing to do this.
Yeah, that's amazing. And are these, students, young people who, this seems like this would be sort of a coveted job to me. It would be like being a bat boy at Wrigley Field almost.
I wish you were that popular. When we bought the place, there were a lot of high school students, and over the years, high school students, college students, over the years, it's become kind of a job where people take, like people who work in our kitchen will do a couple nights of setting pins. So it's actually pretty hard to find someone that's willing to do it, even though they get tipped, and even though in a true Chicago fashion, you can, let's say, enhance your score by tipping. There's a little corruption going on. A lot of perfect games.
Yeah, a little
perfect games at South Plains.
A little fin or 10 spot in one of the bowling ball fingers can
exactly
influence on what's happening back there.
Always. My pin boys can be bought, apparently.
Okay. All right. It's good to know that right up front. When did you take over the bar, Steve?
1991.
Okay. So you've been... And since 91, I've noticed lots of changes there. I mean, it's really, you've turned it into really kind of a multi-purpose kind of location in addition to this historic bowling alley.
That's right. We put in, it was sort of a almost like a social club game room. We have six pool tables in the back room where you can play pool, and obviously it's a full bar and restaurant. We've updated the building over the years while still trying to keep an eye on the historic preservation of the space. So we've always tried to be conscious of the history of the building, the space, and what's been going on there. So we're really proud of the way it looks now, but there's a long history of renovations and changes to South Park Lanes over the years, mostly behind the scenes.
Yeah, talk to me a little bit about this neighborhood. I mean, you know, much like Wrigleyville itself, that, you know, was kind of a forgotten neighborhood. Now, you know, the area right around the ballpark itself is, to me, is starting to look like Times Square in New York with all the building that they're doing there. But Southport Avenue has also undergone pretty much of a change. And, you know, you are one of the major anchors of that for decades.
That's right. It's funny, when we got there, we were so excited when a Starbucks came up the street. We're like, oh, we've arrived. But now, you know, a lot of people have come in, renovated the buildings. It's become really a mecca in Lakeview. And we really are sort of the one of the last old players on Southport. And hopefully we can stay there for a while longer. But it's really, it's been a lot of changes. I mean, when we first started, there were we would get our pin setters and our bartenders and servers would get held up after work. I mean, it was crazy 25 years ago, and
yeah,
to see the changes
kinda,
that have gone up.
Seedy. It was, yeah, it was a little on the seedy side not too long ago, and now exactly. It's one of the most upscale neighborhoods in Chicago. You know, the properties around there are some of the highest priced properties around there, and bringing, you know, very upscale families. It's become really kind of a family destination. You can't go up and down Southport without, you know, you have to negotiate the strollers and, you know, the little kids running around and puppies and, you know, all that. It's turned around 100% through the years.
One of the big, I remember distinctly the first time we looked at each other and we're like, oh my gosh, we got to get a high chair. that was a big change for us. So getting a high chair and booster seats were definitely a symbol of change at Southport.
Yeah. And what kind of food are you serving at Southport these days?
So we serve sort of traditional bar and grill fare, burgers, wings, but we try to do it in an elevated style. We've been very successful for so long, giving people more than what they expected. So it might have the look of a shot in a beer joint when you walk in, but I think everybody who comes in and tries the food is amazed at how great our food is. We do a really great job at making things fresh on site all the time, and we're real happy with where we are right now.
Yeah, I gotta say, for years I've enjoyed your pulled pork sandwich there. Really delicious. Great burgers there as well. But friends of mine who are vegetarians say they love going to Southport because they love the selection of vegetarian burgers and salads and things that you have there as well. Really a little something for everyone there.
Well, thank you, and thank you to your vegetarian friends for coming in. We appreciate that. We do try.
Give me the address and the hours and, you know, all that. So if folks haven't been to Southport Lanes and Billiards in a long time, they can stop in.
Sure. We're located at 3325 North Southport, which is right near the Brown Line Southport L stop. We're open every day at 4 o'clock, and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday we open at noon for lunch. So it's a great place like today to come in and watch some football games. The Bears are on a bye week, but we've got lots of other games on. So, yeah, it's a great place to go and just hang out with your friends.
Well, happy 95th anniversary. It's just one of the great Chicago spots that everyone needs to check out. Steve Sobel, the owner of Southport Lanes. Enjoy your day today, and thanks for taking some time to talk to us.
Thank you, Dean. Really appreciate it.
Richard, Sunday morning, live from Los Angeles this morning. I'm here, Shawnee. I'm looking out the window right now, overlooking Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills. Or as my GPS said, Rodeo Drive.
Rodeo.
I'm overlooking Tiffany and Company. And
oh, you're in the highfalutin area.
I am in the highfalutin area this morning. We are in the super highfalutin area right off of Wilshire Boulevard.
Do they have a Fuzzy's Pizza there?
No, they don't. But I did. You know what I found out about Fuzzy's Pizza? Owned by three retired Chicago guys.
See? Wasn't there a Fuzzy's sports bar or somewhere around in the city?
Not that I
not you're aware of.
The Houston Post did an article about them and said Fuzzy's Pizza, run by three retired guys from Chicago. They have great pizza, great pasta, delicious baked sandwiches. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. That's what they all say. let's see. Oh, they have the world's best Greek salad. Apparently better than Greece itself.
So they have the President Bush pizza. Are you ready for the ingredients?
Oh, boy.
Artichoke hearts, pepperoni, Canadian bacon, Italian sausage, green peppers, mushrooms, onions, black olives, red sauce, mozzarella cheese.
No broccoli because he doesn't like it.
Do we know if it's HW or just plain W?
It just says President Bush. There's also a First Lady Barbara Bush's pizza, so I'm guessing it's HW. The Barbara Bush pizza, chicken, spinach, mushrooms, artichoke. What's with the artichokes? Garlic, red sauce, mozzarella.
That does sound good, I got to say.
Artichokes?
Let's place an order.
You don't like artichoke hearts?
On pizza? No.
But that would be really
tasty. I think they'd be kind of good, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Incidentally, they are not alone in the name of an eating establishment by the name of Fuzzy's. There's a Fuzzy's Sports Pub and Grill in Waukesha.
Oh, look at you.
And there's a Fuzzy's Restaurant in Saginaw, Michigan.
Not a good name for a food place. I don't
There's
care.
Also a Fuzzy's Taco Shop.
That sounds so gross.
This is in Fort Worth.
How many times would you say Fuzzy, Shawnee?
Well, the morning, let's see, we've got another 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Wait, did you say this is in Fort Worth, Texas?
There's a Fuzzy's Taco Shop in Fort Worth.
All right, maybe they like their food fuzzy in Texas.
There's another one in Alpharetta, Georgia. That's
would not
Atlanta.
Be the first thing that shocked me about people from Texas. yeah, they have, I guess their pizzas all look, oh, here's the Fuzzy Special. The Fuzzy Special, pepperoni, Canadian bacon, Italian sausage. I already don't like it. You don't need that much meat on one pizza. Green pepper, mushroom, onion, and black olives. That's too much meat on the pizza, right?
That is a lot of meat.
I agree.
That's too much. Yeah, yeah.
One type and then mix it in with some veggies.
And the veggies would be nice.
And I really think the artichokes would be pretty good on that.
I'm a fan of the artichoke heart, so, they have white quiche. Pizza. White quiche pizza.
White quiche pizza.
That does not sound good to me. That sounds gross.
No.
Philadelphia like cheesesteak pizza?
I'd like a fuzzy white quiche pizza, please. That sounds gross. All right, we've given them enough attention. Maybe someday when we have absolutely nothing else to do on the show, we'll give Fuzzy's Pizza and Houston, Texas, a call. If you weren't listening earlier, they sent the Cubs.
40 pizzas.
The Cubs ordered 40 pizzas from this place called Fuzzy's, world's worst name for a pizza place, to the Houston Astros. And apparently it's a tradition that the outgoing World Series champions send pizzas to the incoming world champions. So that explains that.
That explains what's going on here.
That explains why Mike Hamernick has had to wait so long to give us
sorry, Mike.
The forecast. More than you'd ever want to know about pizza, Mike?
I didn't realize they're in Houston. Otherwise, I was thinking a sponsorship was on the way. Fuzzy's Weather Desk at the WGN Weather Center. That works.
Get that fuzzy product placement.
You know
everywhere.
What? These Fuzzy's Taco Shops seem to be a franchise. There's one in Missouri City, Missouri, that has very good ratings. Maybe that's the potential sponsorship.
Are we going to have to do a segment on the world's worst named food establishments? If anyone can find any that are worse than Fuzzy as the name of a food place, 312-981-7200. In the meantime, we're still dealing with the fog in the Chicago area this morning, Mike?
It's starting to let up, Dean. The visibility has improved considerably along the lakefront. We've been watching our cameras there, and the fog has certainly eased. If the fog had persisted and, say, the Bears were playing at home today, we might have had another fog bowl because it was down to visibility is down to about another 100 feet or so in some spots. So it was really thick out there this morning. But it's easing as the warm front that didn't quite make it into Chicago will start slipping south, and some drier air will alleviate the fog potential. But it's probably a good thing this warm front didn't make it into Chicago, Dean, because along and south of that front, we're looking at heavy rain potential for the rest of the day today into tonight, as well as severe storms. Much of central and southern Illinois into central Indiana and southern Indiana outlook for a perhaps a potential significant severe weather outbreak south of Chicago, where temperatures right now, it's 69 in Champaign, 74 in St. Louis, 68 in Lafayette, and 70 degrees in Indianapolis, while we're sitting around 50 in downtown Chicago, and it's only in the upper 40s in the suburbs. So it's dreary, it's damp, but we're going to miss out on the heavy rains this time, and we've had our share of heavy rain events here in Chicago, so we will pass on this one. But if you're headed south into Indiana or downstate, be aware that it's going to be bumpy for the next 6 to 8 hours with several rounds of potentially strong to severe thunderstorms down in that direction. For us here in Chicago, though, we're just going to see mainly light showers. Severe threat will stay to our south, and this rain should dry up by late this afternoon and into tonight, and we'll have a pretty quiet week coming up here in Chicago for the most part. And again, if you're headed south, the main severe weather right now, actually, take a look at the radar. We have some big storms around Kankakee and Manteno. They're headed toward Lowell, Cedar Lake, as well as Crown Point and I-65. And some of these storms right now that are south of the city, rather robust, they may have some small hail, but they're below severe limits at this point. So we'll watch those storms as we go throughout the day, but not expecting anything severe locally here in Chicago.
Okay, Michael, that sounds like we're kind of seasonal, I guess.
Yeah, cool, dry week ahead, storm-free. So we don't have any rain or snow to deal with, it looks like, for most of this week. Next chance of rain would be, it looks like, next Saturday night or Sunday. And highs will be in the 40s for much of this week. Typical November weather. Hopefully we'll get some sunshine in here. Looks like we'll have a couple of days where we'll have a shot at it.
Yeah, not too bad. Not on behalf of all the bald guys walking around in the cold, freezing rain the other day. Thank goodness it's going to be a rain-free week coming up.
Yeah, get that hat ready, Dean. Eventually you're going to need it.
Oh, I'm already like knee-deep in hats for...
All right.
The weather that we've had lately. There's Mike Kamernick at our WGN Weather Center with the latest. We'll take a quick break. Still to come on our weekend theater segment, we're going to be talking with Lin-Manuel Miranda, the originator and the original star of Hamilton, an American musical. He was in Chicago this week. We had a one-on-one conversation. We're going to share that coming up on WGN. 10:23, this is Dean Richards, live in Los Angeles this morning, talking to Denzel Washington this afternoon. We're going to have that for you on the WGN TV Morning News tomorrow. 10:23, check your clocks. This morning at 2 is when we officially went back to Central Standard Time. We're talking about Fuzzy's Pizza, worst name ever for a food establishment. Turns out, that is not the case. We've got some being texted in. I found a couple. Sam, you found a couple also?
I found six pretty bad ones. You want me to just read them off?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, in Portland, Oregon, there's a Chinese place called Hung Far Low.
This is a family show. These are actual restaurants.
This is a family show.
Swanee, this is educational content Sam is doing right now.
Move fast. In Arcadia, California... Young Dong Garden.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Do you want me to stop?
Glad you could be with us on our final show.
All right, I'll stop.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I mean,
I'm already fired. No,
are they dirtier than that?
Maybe I shouldn't read the last one then.
Because I found one. It's also apparently Asian food that's called Poo Poo Hot Pot. I'm not sure I would go to Poo Poo Hot Pot. Or there's another one, a Vietnamese restaurant in London called La Dudu.
Did you see the restaurant in India?
Which one?
The Chocolate Log.
Okay. All right.
Oh, you can say it, but I can't. You can say La Dudu.
Okay, here's one. Here's one that's called, you know, the lovely Disney. Shwani. Settle down, Shwani. There's, you know, the movie Finding Nemo, right?
Yes.
Disney or Pixar movie. Here's a fish place called Frying Nemo, fish and chips.
Poor Nemo.
Not exactly where you're going to take the kids, I think. Okay, do you have any more?
I've got three more. I'm only going to say two, though, because the third one I don't want to say anymore. A pizza place in New York City, Hot and Crusty. And then an Irish pub in Pembroke, Massachusetts called Poopsies.
Poopsies. Seems to be a theme. Okay, now I'm curious what's the one that Sam isn't using.
I don't want to say it. I like my
job. I'll find out.
All right, I'll just say it. It's a chain in Florida. I kid you not, and I looked it up for verification. Dirty Dick's Crab House.
20?
No, I'm surrender.
Swanee, I hope you enjoy whoever the new host is of the show on Sunday morning. It's been nice working with you.
Yep, that's right. 35 years.
Yeah, 30.
35
hey, this is
years.
A, this is a. Yeah, this is a chain. This is not. This is not. You know, we're not making these up. We're not doing this for shock value. This is educational. That's all I can say.
Sunday morning.
We're going down to line 9 here. One, Wendy Snyder is calling in, who you can hear here on WGN from, is it 9 until noon or 10 until noon? I can't remember when Steve Cochran leaves.
From 10 until noon.
10 until noon, and then the bonus hour is on the web. How's Wendy on Sunday morning?
What have you done to WGN radio? Are there a bunch of 12-year-old boys on the air right now?
Yes. Yes.
Doo-doo makes you laugh.
Come on. It's clearly making you laugh now, too.
I know. I'm one of those 12-year-old boys.
I know. These are actual food establishments, Wendy. It's not like we're making this up, you know, just for shock value or anything. We're far too mature and professional to do anything like that.
It all started with Fuzzy's Pizza.
These are actual joints that we're talking about. Maybe I shouldn't use that word, given what Sam just said. Maybe that's not the best word for me to use this
It's all my fault.
All right. Wow. Hold me in to both.
Sam went there. Sam completely went there.
Uh-oh. I believe it.
Wendy, what do you have on your show tomorrow?
Oh, my God. It's a surprise.
Okay. In other words, they have nothing planned. Yeah. I only hope that you can keep the high intellectual level that we've set here today on the Bill and Wendy show tomorrow.
You just pass me the baton, Dean.
That's why we love her. Wendy Snyder. Thanks, honey. Have a great day. Steven, hi. You're on WGN.
Yes. How are you?
Good morning.
There was a bar on Lake Street and Anderson Road called the Fuzzy Navel.
See, again, nothing appetizing about that whatsoever. Is this a bar? Was this also a restaurant or just a bar?
Just serving a bar, basically serving pizzas, you know,
right. Bar food,
and
bar
things
food.
Of that nature. Yeah. Yes.
There's the name of a mixed drink by that, isn't there?
There is.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, there is.
There is. There are some other drink names that we won't mention. Sam probably will at some point in the show. Sam, who's now working blue on the show. Steven, thanks for the call. Hi, Jim. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Hey, Dean. How you doing?
Very well.
Well, here's an actual restaurant. The worst kitchen sausage, speaking of the worst places to eat.
Oh, boy. Get your finger on the...
in Plano, Illinois.
Get your finger on the panic button.
But actually, it's a really good... My wife and I have been there a number of times, and it's really good, hearty German... Different sausages and, you know, German potato salad is actually pretty good. Just love the show on this gloomy Sunday morning, laughing really hard, my wife and I, listening to all the juvenile humor, which everybody appreciates, whether they admit it or not.
This is a long setup. This is better be good.
But anyway, the worst kitchen sausage company, and actually I recommend it. Like I said, we've been there. It's actually pretty good.
Oh, it's called the Worst Kitchen.
Yeah, W-U-R-S-T.
The Worst Kitchen. Okay.
Right. Yeah, no, this I'm not making this up. German, it's a German restaurant and grocery store in Plano. Plano, Illinois, so not too far from the city, about an hour west.
That is actually very, very clever for a sausage place. The worst kitchen.
It's good German food and different sausages, nothing fancy, but it's really good, and they are the worst kitchen sausage company.
So. Yeah, it's probably better than this restaurant that I found that's in London called the Golden Stool.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
only...
I would, you know, I haven't tried that one, but
well, We'll leave it there. Have a great day. Thanks for
okay,
the call.
Thanks, Dean. Take
and
care.
And everybody, thanks for listening to my final show. We'll be back. There is the lovely Wendy Snyder. Who says we broke WGN? Shawnee, I blame this on you.
Well, once again, I'm blamed for everything.
But I took it from 1 to 11, so it's probably my fault.
No, yes. We're blaming Shawnee.
Oh, okay.
Sam, stay with me. We're blaming this on Shawnee.
Yeah, Shawnee.
Sam,
on
I thought you were my friend.
I'll turn on you real quick, Shawnee.
Yeah, I guess.
Shawnee, if you hadn't laughed and encouraged us. We're just 12-year-old boys wanting someone to laugh at us. Please, notice me. Notice me. I found one more. It's a Mexican restaurant called Tequila Mockingbird. How clever is that?
That's a clever name.
I like it.
How clever is that?
I would check that out.
Mexican place, Tequila Mockingbird.
I would check that out.
Yeah, very clever.
I like that. You can't count on me like
1, 2, 3, I'll be there. Dean Richards, Sunday morning. We're live in Los Angeles this morning. Shawnee, ask me what I was enjoying as a nice snack while I was listening to your newscast this morning.
Something from Fuzzy's Pizza.
I was enjoying 3 different types of melons.
Eating healthy. Good for you.
I was enjoying 3 different types of melons.
Cantaloupe, musk melon, and honeydew, perhaps?
Cantaloupe, honeydew, and watermelon.
A watermelon?
Yeah.
Oh.
Nice, sweet watermelon.
It says there's over 20 different types of melons. I did not know that.
That is correct.
Wow.
That is correct. We will feature many of them next Sunday.
Are we going to have a display table for this?
Yes, of course.
For the melons and then the Know Your Nuts segment?
Here's.
And then Dean will go Gallagher at the end. Smash.
Bring your ponchos if you're going to sit in the first couple of rows. Here's how I'm envisioning the Know Your Melons segment. I'm gonna have several different varieties of melons. I'm gonna cut up one of them and have one whole, so I can show what it looks like, before you cut it up. And we'll show that on the web. The more that I think about this, the more that it doesn't make one bit of sense on radio. But I think we'll be able to describe it okay. And then we'll also have some of us and audience members tasting different melons. We'll have a blind taste to see if people can identify which melon is which. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I imagine we'll have watermelon. I imagine we'll have cantaloupe and honeydew. Those are the ones that are the most common. But would you know a Crenshaw melon if you saw it?
No, I would not.
Do you even know what a Crenshaw melon is?
No, I do not.
I'm going to learn next week.
Okay.
That's how educational this show is. Do you know what a horned melon is?
With the way this morning has gone, I'm not going to make any comments about a horned melon.
I've never tasted it, but I looked it up, and it's supposed to have a tart taste combination between zucchini and cucumber.
Why is it called a horned melon?
Because the outer skin is prickly. It is. I don't know. How else do I describe that?
I'm looking at it now. It looks like, it looks like a, not like a cactus, but something of that nature on the outside.
Yeah, like cactus fruit. That's exactly what it looks like. Santa Claus melons, canary melons are fairly common.
Oh, I've seen these melons before. I didn't know what they were. But
yeah, you've seen them in the store before.
Mm-hmm. I've seen those.
So we'll have on display the different kinds of melons to see if people can identify them, and then also a tasting.
Okay. How do I eat a horned melon?
I like how Shawnee approves.
Yeah, but despite all this, come to the Tree Time remote show that we're doing anyway.
Cut the fruit in half as shown above. Gently squeeze one half until the slime-covered seeds.
Which one is this?
This is the horned melon.
Oh, yeah.
The seeds are not harmful to eat, but many people prefer to hold the seeds between their... Oh, okay, I'm done.
Where do you hold the cheese between your
between
cheek and gum?
Between your teeth, yeah. and just eat the flesh from the melon.
Look how educational this is going to be. This is oozing of education.
Yes, it is.
Slimy, prickly melons. And your Uncle Dean.
Well, and this is just one of the segments. The other, we've got the stars from the Marriott Lincolnshire's new production, Newsies. They're going to perform for us. We're going to have some other performers and Christmas carolers, even though it feels like it's too early for Christmas carolers, doesn't it?
Well, we were there even earlier last year.
We were there right after the Cubs won the World Series.
Yeah, right.
But it's I feel like a Target store, and we've put the Christmas display out already. It just feels like it's early. But we're at Tree Time Christmas Creation, so it's the Christmas spirit. So we're going to have Christmas carolers. We're going to have some other entertainment. Elton Jim Toronto is going to be there. It's, you know, he's always a blast. We're going to you know what we're going to do? We're going to play Password. In person.
Oh, we're going to do Password again? Okay.
Yeah, wasn't that? It was fun a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yes. I wiped the floor with you, Shawnee.
Yeah, I know you did.
Wow. The trash talking is beginning already. The password is trash talk. So we're going to do that next week, and very similar to our Know Your Melons feature, we're also going to do, because it's holiday baking season, you know, people are baking. We're going to also do a segment called Know Your Nuts, where we're going to put out a variety of different kinds of nuts.
No, you're nuts.
Sample and identify. More education. This show is becoming more like PBS every day, isn't it?
PBS, the BBC, name it.
We could have a pledge segment. Wouldn't that be nice? We should have an incredibly boring pledge segment to interrupt everything, and then it would really be just like PBS.
You have a texter from the 219 asking if we will do another rendition of the 12 Days of Christmas.
Well, I've had quite a few requests for that this week as well. Will we do? We had a groundbreaking. I don't know if we could ever top the version of 12 Days of Christmas that we did at the Paramount Theater when we did the live show there last year.
That was incredible.
I don't know if we want to do that.
Except
or
for the one guy that forgot how to count, like, multiple times. You're like, no, you're four. You're after five.
You are the fourth day of Christmas. It comes right after three, right before five. He had a little trouble with that. So I don't know if we do that again. Maybe, do we make that a holiday tradition where we do a version of 12 Days of Christmas? We'll see. Unless we think of something better, then, you know, we're going to do that. But we're going to give away tickets to the Carole King musical Beautiful next week. Lou Malnati's is going to be out there. We always have a huge food table when we do these shows. And, you know, people come on out and sit and watch. I'm amazed people sit and watch the whole four-hour show, which, you know, honestly, if I wasn't getting paid, I'm not sure I would sit and watch the whole four-hour show. But we do have a lot of fun, and you know, the Tree Time are wonderful hosts, and they have wonderful things to get you in the holiday spirit of it all. It's all going to be in Lake Barrington. We'll be live out there for the full show 9 to 1 next week at 22N102 Pepper Road. If you want to get more information, you can go to WGNRadio.com. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. And our weekend theater segment, we've been talking Hamilton the last couple of weeks because we had Jose Ramos, part of the Chicago cast, one of the few Chicago natives in the Chicago cast of Hamilton that's downtown in Chicago right now, because they had their benefit on Monday for Puerto Rican hurricane relief that I hosted. It was such a great event. Such talented people, and they raised over $15,000 for hurricane relief, which was great. And then a couple of days later, the creator of Hamilton, an American musical, the original Alexander Hamilton, the Tony Award winner, Pulitzer Prize winner, the accolades go on and on, Grammy Award winner, Lin-Manuel Miranda came to town, was also of Puerto Rican descent. And he went to the National Museum of Puerto Rican Arts and Culture in Humboldt Park simply to raise awareness, to remind people that the need for hurricane relief is still great. He spoke to an audience at the museum about that, along with former Alderman Billy Ocasio. And we had a chance to sit down one-on-one with Lynn again and talk not only about Puerto Rican hurricane relief, but his movie that he has just finished, the Mary Poppins sequel, Mary Poppins Returns, that he has just completed, and a bunch of other stuff as well. I thought that you would enjoy it this morning. Lin-Manuel Miranda on WGN. Because you know where you go, cameras follow.
Right.
And
look, here, I got Puerto Rico on the news.
And it
well
worked.
Done.
And it worked. Here we are. But it was interesting. You were just speaking to the crowd here a few minutes ago, and you said that your initial reaction with this when the disaster hit was to write lyrics.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting response that yielded the song, which is now number one on iTunes in 17 different countries.
Yeah, well, That's how I enter the world. It's through writing. And, you know, I think everyone who has ties to that island, whether it's friends or family, has had a terrible silence. And, you know, everyone here on this side, on the mainland, were waiting to hear from their friends, were waiting to hear from their family. And so my feed was filled with the names of towns. Has anyone heard from Luquillo? Has anyone heard from Vega Alta? And so I began writing a song with the names of all the towns. I thought, let's make them never feel forgotten again. And so I began writing almost like praying, really, the night after the hurricane hit, and then tried to make it happen as quickly as possible. And I burned up my Rolodex. You know, I called the Puerto Rican artists I know and love and admire, many I don't know, and we put this thing together in about 2 weeks, and it was out about 2 weeks after I wrote it, which is really fast, but that's the kind of attention this crisis demanded, was a really fast response.
And as so many fundraisers have been, 100% of the proceeds for this, all of it, goes to hurricane relief.
That's right.
Which is amazing. Much like the benefit that your cast put on in Chicago that
so
I was
proud
so proud to be part of and hosting. The people that you have chosen to be on the show are so talented and so passionate, but their hearts are so big, and they care so much about the same things that you do.
Yeah, well, you know, Tommy Kail is our director, and he's good at a million things, but what he's really great at is casting with an eye towards humanity, with an awareness that, you know, we're casting them in the show, but they're going to spend 8 shows a week together, and we need to cast people who can come together as a family. And I've been so proud to watch the Chicago company do that again and again and again. And Jose's fundraiser on the 30th, you know, like we were saying before the camera started, there's nothing better than watching amazing performers show off for each other. That's how you get real electricity.
Yeah.
And so, I'm sorry I missed it, but I heard it was amazing.
It was
amazing. Thank you for being a part of it.
More than happy to, but you know, it's a smaller theater, so I felt like I was in the Dick Van Dyke show, and you know, they were performing in the living room the way they used to.
They just jump, sidestep the ottoman, and blow you away.
Exactly. Yeah. And speaking of Dick Van Dyke, you had an encounter with him when you were in the UK filming Mary Poppins Returns. I have to ask you about this also. You're done filming with it, right?
We're done filming. We finished June of this year, and it's going to take a while to come out. It comes out Christmas of next year, and that's mainly because there are some elements that really honor the original, the animation sequences that just are going to take a long time to make. But yes, I got to play with Dick Van Dyke for a day and a half. I wish I were as spry at age 37 as he is at 91.
Yeah.
He was incredible. I nerded out with him about Bye Bye Birdie and Broadway and working with Tita Rivera. And also, you know, he has such fond memories of working on that film. To be with him was really a dream come true. And he was, you know, you want your heroes to be as awesome as you hope they are, and he totally is.
Yeah. You are going to be hanging out with former President Barack Obama today, and Michelle Obama, and Chancellor Raffer, and Common, all at the Obama summit that's taking place downtown today. What will you be doing? What do you expect was going to be happening today.
Well, listen, when Obama calls, you say, I serve at the pleasure of the president. Yeah. So he called me, and, you know, this is really about civic engagement. It's about getting young people involved in civic engagement. And that means, you know, that ties in exactly with why we're here at the Puerto Rican Museum of Culture. You know, we have to be engaged with the people who make decisions in this country and playing a greater role in that, how important our voices are. So I'll be talking to Common, and we'll be talking about sort of the various things we're passionate about and hopefully inspiring some folks and also getting to see a Chance concert tonight. Which yeah. is always awesome.
You had mentioned in your comments before we started here today that there's no way that you would ever run for office. But like Common, you're very involved in passionate things. You famously tweeted a comment to President Trump in which you said you're going straight to hell. Oh. And I wonder if there's been any blowback on you from that.
Sure, but
and how you feel, and more importantly, how we proceed from all of that. I understand that it was a moment of passion and frustration when you did that.
But it was a moment of I didn't have any words left for you know a moment that was it was possible to unite us in that moment, and the president chose to instead divide us and pit us against each other, and that was my response to that. You know, it's interesting. I'm not remotely interested. You know, I think my first answer to your first question indicates why I should not run for when a disaster strikes, and my first instinct is to write lyrics. That's not the guy you want in charge of drafting legislation. But you know, as a private citizen, there are things I'm passionate about, and I think that what we've seen in the wake of Hurricane Maria is the importance of voices, about voices jumping up and down and being effective. You know, the Jones Act, which is this, you know, 70-year-old law about port fines. We screamed waive the Jones Act, and they waived the Jones Act. You know, we saw it again with the Whitefish contract. You know, we screamed about the Whitefish contract. How has no one seen this? How is this happening? And they canceled the Whitefish. So our voices are more important than ever. I was gratified that when I sent that tweet you mentioned, most people's reaction was, Lynn is never like this. It must be it must be pretty intense and pretty important for that to be what comes out of Lynn's Twitter feed, which is normally my dog and my kid and you know, talking to other Hamilton cast members.
And pictures of your kids in Halloween costumes.
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know.
Which is normally how it is.
And I pride myself on that.
You understand the frustration, and as you said a few moments ago, 75% of the island is still without power.
Absolutely.
How do you not be frustrated?
Yeah, I'm always happy to congratulate someone on a job well done when the job's done. Job's not close to done.
People want to continue to help. You can contact the National Museum of Puerto Rican Arts and Culture here on Division Street in Chicago. You are working with the Hispanic Federation.
Yep.
As well, Hispanic Federation.
Yeah, HispanicFederation.org, and they the proceeds from Almost Like Praying will go to Hispanic Federation, and they, you know, they were one of the first responders in the wake of the hurricane, and they're, you know, they're sort of a time-tested organization.
Yeah, he has still has plenty of family there. He still has lots of friends there. He's very, very passionate about all of it. Lin-Manuel Miranda from Hamilton. Next day, we spoke with him on Wednesday, and that night is when he was with President and Michelle Obama and Common and Chance the Rapper, and they put on one heck of a show that he was part of. Central Standard Time anthem that we can only use on this morning, where we turn back time 1 hour earlier this morning. The official time, Schwani, at the tone is what?
11:11.
You don't have a tone to play or anything?
Beep.
Okay, that's like
11,
I said.
11:11.
Schwani, why haven't you given the weather in L.A.?
Oh,
well, yeah, thanks. There's one person interested in it.
We were It's his show.
We were too busy talking about fuzzies and restaurants and everything else. So I
this has been a super, super, I apologize if we're being too scientific and too technical today. You know, sometimes, you know, we just get caught up in the scientific jargon on the show.
Yes, we do. It is sunny. And, excuse me, mostly cloudy, a big difference between sunny and mostly cloudy.
As Gene looks out the window.
Mostly cloudy, 61 at Los Angeles. You will have a high today of around 67. Precipitation, 15%. Humidity is 87%. The wind's at 0 miles per hour.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks beautiful outside right now.
And
looking out the window, I mentioned I'm in Beverly Hills today. We're doing some interviews today with Denzel Washington, which I'll have on the morning news tomorrow morning, the TV morning news tomorrow, and we'll play the full interview back in a week or so here on the radio. But we're in Beverly Hills. We're overlooking Rodeo Drive. We're in the fancy schmancy.
Rodeo Drive.
We're right by Rodeo Drive,
Rodeo
y'all.
Rodeo Drive.
You'll
see Jed Clampett and Jethro drive by fairly soon.
Wouldn't that be great?
On Rodeo Drive.
See a nasty old truck like they had, and Granny sitting in her rocking chair in the back of it. That would be fantastic. You were talking about people in line in New York City for the marathon?
Yes.
Today?
Yes, there's over a million spectators, 50,000 runners in New York City.
Thank you, whatever gods were looking over me to make Denzel Washington be here in Los Angeles instead of New York, because wouldn't that have been great that I somehow weasel out of being in town during the Chicago Marathon,
and then I
accidentally wind up in the middle of an even bigger one
in New York.
So thank goodness I'm not there. But talking about people standing in line, what is the last 3 days people have been standing in line to get these new
iPhones,
Apples, these new Apple 10s that just came out, but they're still in line. I drove by an Apple store the other day, not the one downtown, but I imagine there's still a line at the new one right across from the radio station. But the Apple store that I went by on North Avenue, people still standing in line 3 days later. Really? It's unbelievable to me.
I saw an item, though, where a couple of people did wait in line and then got the phones, and they thought, next time I'm just going to order this online. Not stand in line, I'll order it online.
But, I mean, is it still that big of a deal that you have to have it, you know, the day that it comes out, a couple of days after it comes out? That's amazing to me. And does this new Apple 10, I'm not 100% up on what this new Apple 10 does.
I don't know either. Sam, you
the only thing that the only thing that I heard is that you can make funny emojis with it, and I'm not standing in line for 3 hours
just to
make funny emojis.
What's the big deal about this one, Sam?
It's $1,000, right? That's the big deal.
And it's $1,000. That's the other thing. I was at a red light, counting the number of $1,000 there and there and there. I mean, I don't know how many people. There were 100 people outside the store. $1,000 a pop just to get the new iPhone so they can, you know, have the new iPhone. Schwani, here's the big difference between the 10 and the 8 Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Dual lens.
Okay.
12 megapixel camera. The telephoto lens is slightly faster. Stop me when you think.
How do you put the film in it?
Do you still have to take the film to Walgreens?
Well, you said it has a dual lens and the camera. I mean, you know, how do you put the film in this?
Schwani, you just want to make sure that you can play Snake on it, right?
Right.
On the old Nokia.
Wants to play Pong. Schwani loves a good game of Pong.
Duck Hunt.
It's very similar to the 8 Plus. And didn't the 8 Plus just come out like a month ago? And now the 10's out.
Something like that. Have you heard about the new Face ID that's on the 10? It's a new feature where, like,
it recognizes your face.
Right, but you can't, in other words, you can't unlock the phone unless it's your face.
So it's facial recognition.
Pretty much, which is scary as hell.
Yeah, I don't want that.
The machines are taking over.
I don't want that. You know what I would be in fear of is, you know, I hold my phone up to my face for the facial recognition, and then Siri says, "Hi, Carl Malden." I don't want that. I don't need to be insulted by my phone.
Carl Malden. And then it looks at you and says, "Don't leave home without me."
Right. That was his famous commercial.
There's a camera and an infrared sensor that will scan your face and your eyes, according to Apple.
Yeah. Wow. That's right. Not sure that I want that.
So if you grow a beard or something like that, it will still recognize your face.
I don't use the fingerprint thing.
Do you have one that you can do that with?
I have a 7 Plus that I'm perfectly happy with. For the most part, but it has the option where you can scan your fingerprint.
Yeah, your thumb, right?
Your thumb, yeah. In order to get in the phone. And I don't even like to do that. What's wrong with just a code? You put in your number and you get in. What's wrong with that? I don't need my phone scanning me. Next thing I know, it'll be walking around my house by itself.
Well, you don't have the Echo, do you, at home, Dean? The Amazon Echo, do you have one?
I do not, no.
Right.
No.
I don't want to get one either because I feel like even when you don't talk to it, it listens to everything you say.
It's still listening.
It
right.
has to.
Of course.
It has to.
And that's going so... I mean, this is just my crazy, you know, Uncle Dean conspiratorial theory on this. What you're saying, even though you're not telling it, turn on the radio or, you know, do this or write this down on a shopping list, it's somehow it's retaining it somewhere.
It has to, because how else would it listen for the name?
Exactly.
It has to listen to everything in case you just say, you know, yada, I'm not going to say it, but you know the name of the thing.
Right. Yeah, it's too much technology, but it's apparently we're the only ones that have a problem with it because these people, I'm telling you, in the you know how rainy it's been the last several days? Standing in the rain for hours and hours and hours to spend, I think $1,000 is where you start. You actually, even if you don't add on too many other things to it.
Well, plus taxes.
Taxes and stuff. You're walking out pretty close to $1,200.
Insurance.
To stand in the rain for several hours to have your phone take over your life. That's basically what it's about. Wow, we couldn't sound older than right now. We just sound like we should be on the in the back of Jed Clampett's truck right now with Granny. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, live from Beverly Hills, California today. Talking to Denzel Washington a little bit later on this afternoon. We will be sharing that with you here on the Sunday show, our daily visit on Steve Cochran's show from 8 to 8:30 in the morning, every weekday morning, and, of course, tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News as well. I was, if you've been listening the last couple of weeks, you heard that we were just back from our WGN Radio listener cruise where we went to Italy, Croatia and Greece and had a spectacular time. So I was very interested in this Time Magazine story that just came out of the World's Best Awards, where they list what they consider to be the 10 best cities in Europe. This based on their readers' opinions on the top hotels and top resorts and cruise lines and spas and airlines and landmarks and friendliness toward Americans and food and culture and shopping, overall value, that sort of thing is how they base it all. And they came up with what they consider their top 10. One of the cities, the number 10 city on this list is where we actually began our WGN Radio cruise in Venice, Italy. Absolutely spectacular, beautiful, highly recommending anyone if you've never been. When you go in the fall. The weather was amazing. It wasn't as crowded. Summer times can be, super crowded, can often also be ridiculously hot and uncomfortable. So I am recommending that to you. The number 9 spot I've never been, but people have told me that Istanbul, Turkey is also pretty spectacular. That's what Time calls their number nine city. Siena, Italy comes in at number eight. Also, I've never been to there or the number seven spot, Budapest, Hungary, which everyone tells me is spectacular. I wanted to mention, you know, we can we have time for a couple of phone calls here. If you have been to any of these spots, if you think that, you know, that there's some place that belongs on that top 10 list, 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. I would love to hear from you about that. At number six on the list, I have been to Seville, or as they call it, Sevilla, Spain. It's an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous city. And I found that the people in Seville, in Sevilla, to be a little friendlier than some of the bigger cities. And I guess that's not terribly uncommon. I imagine that if somebody came to the United States, they probably would find people to be a little friendlier in smaller towns than they might in some of the large metropolitan areas. I'm not one of those people that find New Yorkers to be unfriendly. But, you know, people in smaller towns, you know, just tend to be a little more friendly in general. So number six is Seville, Spain. Krakow, Poland comes in the number five spot. Never been, but everyone, again, tells me, you know, gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. Maybe some of these spots are, you know, places that we might consider for future WGN radio, you know, trips, whether we do a land trip or whether we do another cruise to some of these places. But I would love to go to Krakow. I would love to go to Budapest. You know, twist my arm to go back to Italy or Greece anytime. You know, absolutely beautiful. And also in Spain, the number four most popular city in Europe, according to Time magazine, San Sebastian, Spain. It looks very much, just from pictures that I've seen, looks very much like the south of France, very cosmopolitan and so forth. Rome, Italy, comes in the number three spot, definite must-see. Number two, Barcelona, Spain, I've been a couple of times, and is absolutely, you know, unbelievable. I have to say about Barcelona, a little disappointed in the food in Barcelona, Spain. I don't know why I thought that it was going to be spectacular, that it would be like my favorite Spanish restaurants that we have here in the Chicago area, and there are many that I think are quite great. I was a little disappointed, maybe, again, because I was in a big city. Maybe I was only hitting the touristy spots. I did have the opportunity to get into the neighborhoods and a little off the beaten tourist track, and did find the restaurants to be a little better. But overall, not blown away with the food in Barcelona as I was in just about everywhere I went in both Italy and in Greece. And the number one spot, according to the Time magazine list, is Florence, Italy, which I have been, and it is gorgeous. But they, you know, they list it for all of the art, for the birthplace of Italian Renaissance and the centuries-old cathedrals and the medieval, pedestrian-friendly medieval neighborhoods, as they put it, the terracotta-roofed palazzi lining the Orno and the galleries housing masterpieces like Michelangelo's David and Botticelli's Birth of Venus, you know, the food. I can only imagine, you know, if like everywhere that I've been in Italy, I've always said even the worst place you go in Italy for food is spectacular, you know, better than any place else. So I can only imagine that it must be great. If you want to get some more information, you can take a look at Time's website, and they've got the full article on all of those places. It is 11:29. When we come back from the break, we'll get into our Dean's List A-List interview for today. Gary Oldman has a new movie that's going to be coming out in December, in which he plays former British Prime Minister Winston Churchill. What a transformation. What a performance. We'll talk with Oldman and his Chicago days as Commissioner Gordon in the Dark Knight movies when we come back. WGN. Ronnie, talking about the New York Marathon, we also now have the name of the women's winner. First American to win the women's New York Marathon since 1977. First time that an American has won. Shalane Flanagan. Ah, Shalane Flanagan is the big winner.
You know where
the women's New York Marathon.
You know where they're going to celebrate?
Hmm.
Fuzzies. There's the Fuzzies in New York.
Is there really?
Mm-hmm. I just looked it up.
All right. Something we were talking about
12 hours ago
on the show.
Have you heard the American anthem either? Have you heard that one? I'll have that ready. I'll have that ready, too, at 12.
Thank you. Sam is in charge of all the national anthems on the show.
Yes.
Whenever. So when the Olympics aren't going on and he has to play all the national anthems for everybody, he does that on our show. A couple of things in showbiz I wanted to mention. First of all, condolences to Jimmy Fallon. His mom passed away yesterday. Apparently she had been ill for a while, but Jimmy Fallon, his whole family, were at her bedside when she passed away at a hospital in New York. So we send our condolences. I guess he canceled Friday night show for that reason, but Gloria Fallon, who had been on The Tonight Show a couple of times, you know, in the audience, they take a shot of her. Only 68 years old.
Mm.
He's
had a rough time of it here lately.
He
with his son being born with the heart problem, and now
that's Jimmy Kimmel. Okay. That's the other Jimmy.
Thank you.
That's the other Jimmy. But Jimmy Fallon also has had his own personal issues that he's dealt with. So what you are saying is correct, that he has had a couple of things going on. But that's you know, always sad to lose a parent, but especially that young, 68. So anyway, we send our condolences as well to the Fallon family. And a surprise concert last night, Shwani, like I need to tell you, at the Aragon last night. Hit it. Shwani, I'll give you $10,000 if you know who this is.
I keep stressing my mind. I look for peace, but see, I don't attain.
No, I can't come up with it.
You tried, though, for the 10. You were going for the 10,000.
I was going for the 10,000.
You were just going to. I'm surprised you just didn't throw a name out. Just
how about the Turtles?
I try to run, but see,
okay. No, not the Turtles.
Okay.
But we are still happy together. This is Kid Cudi, a pretty popular rapper. He was doing a show at the Aragon last night on West Lawrence in the Uptown neighborhood.
Right. And you think it's a surprise?
Well, it was a surprise because who walks out on the stage surprises the audience? Kanye West.
Oh, okay. There's the surprise.
Yeah, which was you know, kind of a big deal because Kanye West has not done any performances. Remember, he sort of had that nervous breakdown a couple of years ago. I think it was last year, actually. But he hasn't been on stage at all in a year. And he is apparently friends with Kid Cudi. Last night, he walks out on the stage, and the two of them perform a song together. The crowd at the Aragon, as you expect, you know, went pretty crazy to see Kanye West back on the
stage. So it's been a year since he had that breakdown?
It's been a year.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's been a year. So I guess, you know, this is a, you know, he you know, it's kind of half performed a song. He performed a song with King Cudi called Father Stretch My Hands Part 1. You know, so a far cry from doing his own concert, but still back out on stage. And I think that's, you know, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised you weren't at that show. I know you're a huge fan of both King Cudi and Kanye West, especially Kanye West. Aren't you in the Kanye West fan club?
I'm past president.
Past president.
I must admit, I know who Kanye West is. I must admit, I don't know. King Cudi, is it?
King Cudi.
C-U-D-I. Haven't heard of it. No.
Well, now you've heard one of the songs.
Okay. So I'm up to date.
That's my goal, Shwani.
bring me into the 21st century.
Drag you into the new millennium, kicking and screaming. One way or the other. And
we're about to approach 2018, right?
Right. Well, you're only 20 years late trying to get into the new century.
Guys, it's Kid Cudi, not King Cudi.
Oh,
Kid.
Kid Cudi.
Yeah, Kid Cudi.
Oh, we're both on it.
No. I was saying, I'm pretty sure I was saying Kid Cudi.
Oh, all right. It was me then that said King Cudi. Yeah.
Maybe I missaid it. But, Cassara, thank you for the
Kid Cudi
correction.
All right.
Cassara's like, why do I have to work with these old people?
Thank you. Word.
She's going to bring us some easily digestible food later on. Shawnee, would you like some strained carrots? Can you hear me? Also,
mashed potatoes.
Larry David was on Saturday Night Live last night. He hosted.
I've been meaning to ask you, have you seen any of the new Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I've seen a couple of the new Curb Your Enthusiasms.
Because you were away when they got started, but
I've seen a couple.
Unbelievable new season.
I've seen a couple, and I'm a fan. I know some people can't stand Larry Sanders' show because he's such a terrible, despicable person on the show.
Larry Sanders?
Larry David. Oh, maybe I did say King Cudi. Larry David, I think his character is hilarious, and the character and the writing on that show is hilarious. So I am a fan of that show. I did not see the full Saturday Night Live last night. I know Alec Baldwin was there. They did a, obviously they did a Donald Trump with Manafort in the shower. The only place he could talk to him to make sure that he wasn't wearing a wire was in the shower. I did see that clip on YouTube this morning. It was kind of funny. So I don't know if the whole show was funny or not. And I saw a little clip of Larry David as Bernie Sanders on The Price is Right. Take a listen to this.
And Bernie Sanders and Derek.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I just want to say this show is a travesty. Consumerism disguised as entertainment. That being said, I do need a new dinette set.
You okay?
Better than ever. We're going to win this thing the Bernie way, which means if I lose, I'll bring everyone else down with me.
Bernie's back! All right.
Funny. It's funny. Larry David.
doing Bernie Sanders.
Feeling the burn again. Yeah, so fun, some funny stuff. When we come back from the break, wanted to share a conversation that we had this week with one of my favorite actors of all time, Gary Oldman. So many great performances that he's turned in through the years. But, wow, wait until you see him in this new movie, The Darkest Night, in which he plays Winston Churchill. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN, and it is 11:51 Central Standard Time. You want to check your clocks. Earlier this week, I had the opportunity to see the new movie Darkest Hour that stars Gary Oldman as former British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who got the UK through World War II, saved them in many ways from the Nazis. This movie, The Darkest Hour, portrays 4 weeks in the life of Winston Churchill as he became the Prime Minister of Britain. And it is an absolutely amazing performance. I know that Gary Oldman is going to be nominated for an Academy Award, and just based on what I've seen right now, they ought to just give him the statue, because he's amazing. The physical transformation is amazing. The story that they tell is amazing. I really like this movie. It's going to be out early December. They haven't picked a date in which it will be released here in Chicago yet, but it'll probably be the first couple of weeks of December right now. You know Gary Oldman from so many other amazing performances over the years. I've been such a big fan of his for a long time. And, for Chicagoans, you probably know that he spent quite a bit of time here in his role as Commissioner Gordon in the Dark Knight movies, in the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight movies that were made here, spending time with Christian Bale and the late Heath Ledger, one of the places that we started off our conversation, our A-list conversation, with Gary Oldman. Welcome back to Chicago. It's nice,
it's nice to have you back
here again.
Home from home.
Yeah. Does it does it bring back Dark Knight memories for
you? It does indeed. Everywhere, actually, everywhere I go to me is now a location, and even from the room of the hotel, I think I recognize a rooftop. Think, yeah, we filmed on that rooftop over there.
Yeah.
So.
There aren't too many people that can recognize the city from rooftops alone, but
we did have that unique qualification.
Yeah,
Chris Nolan, he likes his rooftops. So does Batman.
Did you have special moments when you were here in Chicago and filming those movies?
Yeah, it's full of wonderful memories. I think that I remember it. We had one of those park outdoor screenings of The Sound of Music when they did those. They do those, don't they? They do them on a yearly summer thing.
Sure,
yeah, the summer shows.
Of course.
Spent some time here in the heat. Was here when it was very cold. but fun memories of it. Yeah, great food.
Yeah.
Nice people.
I seem to remember in interviews that we've had, maybe from The Dark Knight, where you talked about doing scenes with Heath Ledger and how memorable that was to you and how that stayed with you, you know, as part of your Chicago experience. Is that still the case?
Yeah, I think that it is. It was such a shock, such a tragic thing with Heath, because of the many wonderful actors that I have worked with, he was truly there, you know, very, very sort of special talent. And when it's cut short like that, you wonder what he would be doing and what wonderful performances. And not only that, I think he was a writer. He would have ended up, I think, directing and doing all sorts of things. He was a very multi-talented man, and it's a terrible, you know. And I've got to know the family. His mom, I'm in contact with still. Yeah.
Some of the scenes that you did together in that are just so amazing. I just didn't think, being such a fan of yours and your filmography, that I could be any more in awe of your talent and your choices. Darkest Hour is stunning. How is it that when you think Winston Churchill, you would think a much older actor, would take on something like this. You saw something in this that you thought you could communicate.
To be very honest with you, I think it was other people that saw something, because I initially turned it down a bunch of times. It was not only stepping into the shoes of this very iconic figure, but into the shoes of all the other people that played him. Our memory of who he was, how much of it is Churchill and how much of it is contaminated by Robert Hardy or Albert Finney, or, you know, Richard Burton and these other people that have played him. So it was all very much a sort of daunting thing, and physically, of course, that was the biggest sort of roadblock for me.
Well, I was almost distracted, too much in this movie, thinking of how they did this. I know that digitally now, they can do most anything.
No digital now.
There's nothing digital here. This is all hours and hours and hours in the makeup chair.
Kazuhiro Tsuji, who was in the movie, he was in the sort of movie business, and he was a protege of Rick Baker. That's really where he started. He then retired and became a sort of fine artist. He does these big sort of realistic sculptures. I felt that he was the only man that could pull it off, that could do it, because his work is so exceptional. So we very luckily, I seduced him out of retirement, and he has risen to the challenge, I think.
Yeah, he more than rose to the challenge. Wait until you see. If you haven't seen in commercials or trailers yet, Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill, physically it's amazing, but this performance is so much more than just the physical transformation. It's a great movie. Early December is when it's going to be coming out. By the way, the weekend box office numbers have just been released, and not a surprise that Marvel's Thor Ragnarok was the number one movie of the weekend. $121 million is how much it has taken in. And has broken a record. Marvel Studios is now the first studio to have three movie openings in excess of $100 million this year. So for the Marvel people, slash, that's Disney, they are having one heck of a year. And, of course, they have Disney has Star Wars still to come in the middle of December. It's a beautiful day. Richard, Sunday morning, WGN. And I'm finishing writing my nasty email to myself, complaining that we were
much.
Well, no, that we were talking during
the national
anthem.
I think you spoke first.
I did. Yes, I did. I'm going to cop to that.
So,
you guys are morons. And immature.
I've been called worse.
And unpatriotic.
Swanee actually stood for both the Kenyan anthem and the American anthem.
I did.
And he faced me, which was super weird.
He is a very respectful, he's a much more respectful person than.
Okay, then. Don't include me on this email.
Well, you're still immature and a moron.
Oh, that I'll agree with. But, you know, don't include me on being disrespectful.
Except Dave Schwann.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to get my two cents in here before all the other emails come in. We should play the full. You know, seriously, no joking around. We should play the national anthem once in a while.
I agree.
The U.S. national anthem.
I agree.
We should play other national anthems, too. It'd be interesting. This could be another feature. Know your national anthem. Maybe for next week's.
I can get it ready. I actually have a snare drum here, too, if you want.
I'll bet we could not. I mean, really think about this. How many other national anthems do you know? I know the French national anthem.
Canada.
I would recognize it. I would recognize O Canada.
Yeah. Canada and the Marseillaise, yes.
Serbia. What else? I could do Serbia.
Serbia, okay. I would know the Greek national anthem. Any other Schwanee that you would know?
You know what? Being of German descent, I could not tell you what the German anthem might be.
I don't know the German national anthem.
I know the Imperial March from Star Wars. Does that count?
I guess. Maybe, a land long ago and far away.
Maybe we should feature different national anthem once in a while.
Okay.
And learn. This is an educational show, right?
That's why we're a Peabody Award-winning program.
28 Peabody Awards for the show so far. I'm just
that
saying.
The number changes every
time. I don't want to. Well, the number changes for the preposterousness that we would win, that we could possibly win a Peabody Award. But I think that actually would be interesting, wouldn't it?
To find a national anthem and play it. Yeah. How many countries have changed national anthems?
Are we actually going to do something interesting on the show? That's not maybe, stupid and moronic?
Maybe. Maybe.
You know, if you Google stupid and moronic, the segment
I'll
that
come
we
Sunday
did...
Sunday morning with Dean Richards.
Well, the segment that we did earlier on weird names
for food, restaurants?
For food places, yeah.
That's got to be a keeper, a record holder for this program.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard the birth of a new feature that we're going to do on the show. Know Your National Anthems. We can start that next week.
We can start it next week with Know Your Melons and Know Your Nuts. No, you're nuts.
I will do the homework. I will find a very obscure anthem.
That'll be Sam's department then. All right. In the meantime, I also think it would be nice once in a while to play our own national anthem. And I very much enjoyed the version that you played. You know, some of them, when celebrities sing and, you know, people, you know, they start going crazy with their vocal acrobatics, as I call it. I like a nice, clean version of the national anthem. And that one that you played a moment ago was very nice. Do you have that ready to go, Sam? Very nice. Very, very, very nice.
Who did that?
That's got to be a military band, is it?
Yes. That's the Air Force.
Air Force band? Yeah.
Spectacular.
They're always first rate.
That's spectacular. I love that. I did think of another foreign national anthem that I know because I watched the movie Borat so many times.
Kazakhstan?
I don't think it's the real national anthem for Kazakhstan, but it's the one that Sacha Baron Cohen wrote, which was hilariously funny, that I'm sure people from that country don't think is nearly as funny as I do. Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Plenty going on this Sunday morning. All the talking head shows on TV today, talking about the president in Asia, talking about Manafort, the grand jury resolution that came out this week and what possible fallout there could be from all of that. I'll leave that to the newsies to get into. That's one of the big things. The other big thing in the entertainment world, and honestly, I'm not so happy to have to report this to you every day, but it is part of my beat of covering entertainment. So I do feel, you know, a little bit of responsibility to report the latest on what's going on with this the Hollywood sexual assault scandals that we've been reporting on for the past several weeks. If you weren't really paying attention to the news over the weekend, Jimmy Fallon was actually fired by Netflix on Friday night as a result of the allegations that were made against him by several actors now, both here and in the UK, where he was the artistic director of the Old Vic Theatre there. So the plot is thickening and getting worse for Kevin Spacey. But also a story that came out yesterday, another accusation that's come out, which is extremely disturbing regarding Spacey, and that has to do with the son of Richard Dreyfuss, who at the time was 18 years old. Harry Dreyfuss is his name. He was an aspiring actor. His father, Richard Dreyfuss, was doing a play with Kevin Spacey in London at the Old Vic Theatre that Kevin Spacey was directing. And the son, Harry Dreyfuss, claims that Kevin Spacey made inappropriate actions on him. I won't go into all the details of it, but was inappropriate with his father right there, with Richard Dreyfuss right there. Things going on under the table. I mean, the father, Richard Dreyfuss, didn't know about it till much later, years later, because the son wasn't able to talk about it, as you can imagine, with his father. He was embarrassed and, you know, had a whole variety of feelings. But with all that has been coming out, he felt empowered to now share this information publicly. So here is another story that is coming out about Kevin Spacey right now, and I'm sure that it's not going to end here. I'm sure that we're going to be hearing more as we go on. We'll keep you posted on this, and both on radio and TV, and keep you posted on all these news stories. I have such mixed feelings about reporting these stories. They're horrible. These happen to be on my beat, in the world of entertainment. And I seriously do feel, sort of a sense of responsibility that to cover these stories, because this is what's, sadly, this is part of what's going on in the world of entertainment right now. It's going on in other business areas also, but it is going on, and part of me just does not want to talk about this at all. Part of it is a little bit nauseating to me that someone that an adult would be a predator on a minor is literally disgusting to me, truly, literally disgusting to me. Whether it's stories about Kevin Spacey, or there have been some lately, whether they're heterosexual or homosexual or whatever, if you're an adult and you are putting inappropriate advances on a child, you are a pedophile in my book. And it's inappropriate and disgusting. And part of me thinks, I just never want to talk about it ever again. But we need to talk about it. We need to make people feel comfortable that if something has happened, that they are comfortable in knowing that they can speak freely and that it's safe, and it shouldn't be ignored. That's just what a Harvey Weinstein would like, or, many go down the list of everyone who's now been accused of this. They would love nothing better for the news to stop talking about this and for their troubles to go away. But, it's an odd feeling that I have in reporting these kinds of stories. There's an interesting story that I ran across last night that said that stars are avoiding red carpets. Stars are not going to special events where they traditionally would walk a red carpet, talk to the press, and take pictures. But stars are avoiding walking on red carpets because they don't want to be asked about these sexual assault issues that are going on. They don't want to be asked if they had some connection with some of the people who are being accused. But others who, just don't even want to offer an opinion on it. They don't want to talk about it. So it's a kind of an interesting time in the world of entertainment reporting. But as so many have pointed out, while the ones who are in entertainment are the most visible, it certainly is something that goes on in business, it goes on in education, it goes on in law. It's clearly opened up a can of worms that there is a very, very, very systemic problem with sexual assault, mostly men against women, that are going on, and there needs to be some kind of resolution to getting to a world where that does not happen anymore. A much nicer subject to talk about, the world of food, with one of my favorite TV chefs of all time. You know her from PBS, and you know her from Eataly here in Chicago. She is the co-owner of Eataly in New York, and here in Chicago and their other locations that they're getting ready to open up. I love Lydia Bastianich. I love her personality, her character, her demeanor, her recipes, her ways of explaining things. She's going to be in the Chicago area next week.
Food Time program, one of my favorite chefs, period. Not just TV chefs, not just cookbook chefs. I'm not going to qualify it in any way. One of my favorite people, not only her warm personality, but her very, very delicious and informative recipes that she's put out in cookbook after cookbook and television show after television show. You know that I'm talking about the Emmy Award-winning Lydia Bastianich, who is headed back to Chicago. Lydia, how are you, my dear? Nice to talk to you again.
Ah, buongiorno, Dean. Great to talk to you, and I look forward to coming to Chicago this week.
Yeah, you're coming. You know, we have nice warm weather this time of year in Chicago.
Well, you know, it's been kind of mixed here in New York. Hot and cold and hot and cold. The weather there is so warm?
No, it's not at all. I was just kidding. I just don't want you to chicken out at the last minute and not show up because I forgot you're in New York.
I can take it.
Yeah. I forgot you're in New York. You're tough. You can take it. Lydia's going to be at the Mackinac Arts Center at the College of DuPage. Doing sort of a special behind-the-scenes look at Lydia and her new book, Celebrate Like an Italian. Lydia, explain what this is, what this evening is like.
Well, it's conversations with Lydia. And I greet everybody. They come in. And then I am on the stage with a moderator who's going to ask me the questions. And the questions most likely are going to be about the book, certainly about myself, my life, my philosophy in the kitchen, you know, my life as an immigrant coming to the United States. And then we open it up for questions to the audience. And so that the audience really gets to ask what they want and what they like. And then there'll be books available, signed books for them to have. So it's going to be kind of an intimate conversation with Lydia.
I assume that you've done evenings like this elsewhere. What are the kinds of things that people want to know about you?
I have done, and I enjoy them. They want to know, really, they want to get down personal. They want to get... they want to know, they're interested very much in my life story, how I came here at 12 years old as a refugee. How did I get started in the food business? Where did I get my passion for love? How did it evolve? As a woman, how did I fare in this tough industry? And then also, you know, about the family and working as a woman and having a family. And then they love my mother. You know, my mother is 97. And she still comes on the show now and then when she can. So they love to hear more about my mother. And then, you know, we go into books, what constitutes a book? How do I get an idea for a book? And then the television series, you know, and all of it, it's just endless in any of those directions. And then I get really kind of on point questions, you know. Lydia, which is the best olive oil, and how do I cook with olive oil? So I go and explain that. Whatever they want, I pull it out and I share it with them.
Well, I was curious about, you know, a couple of those questions myself. I don't want to give away too much. I want people to come to the event to ask these questions. But I will ask you this, is how did this whole thing get started for you? Obviously... food is, very important in your family, in most families, but certainly in an Italian family. Food is very important. Did it evolve out of that? And at what point did you think, I can write a cookbook, I can do a television show, I can have Italy as part of my empire?
know, what happens that, you know, sort of one follows the other and it grows. But I think at the beginning of the day, you know, there is a predisposition to certain arts or music or cooking or whatever one has, you know, God's gift that one gives to, that gives to one of us, each one of us. And for me, I think food, you know, I guess I have to go back to a little bit of my history, where I was born. I was born in Istria, which is no longer part of Italy. And after World War II, Istria, the peninsula, was given to the communist Yugoslavia. So we were ethnic Italians. We got caught behind the Iron Curtain, and we had to change our language, our names, our the way we believe. And food was not all that available. Grandma, I lived with grandma in a sense because my mother was a teacher in the city. But in the country, that's where the food was. And grandma would have chickens, ducks, goats, pigs we had. We made our own olive oil, our own wine. She grew all the vegetables. We stored the beans for the next year. So I was involved in this kind of, I was a little helper. And then when I was 10, my parents decided that they wanted to get us out of there, get the kids out of there. But, you know, that's it had to be a secret. So my mother, my brother, and I went because they allowed part of the family, not the whole family, to go. And my father remained. Ultimately, after 2 weeks, he escaped. He joined us in Italy. There, you know, our life kind of, so where do we go from now? We had family in Italy. Jobs were hard to find. We ended up going into a political refugee camp. That's where they harbored us. And we stayed there for 2 years before Dwight Eisenhower was the president, and he opened the immigration for refugees fleeing from communism.
Yeah.
So, you know, Dean, it's not too much different than what it is today. But to go back to my passion of food that you asked, you know, when I was taken away from there, I didn't say goodbye to grandma. And so I was, there was always a longing in me, you know, that I felt that I kind of got pulled away from something very dear to me. And I think food was my connector. Mm. As we traveled, as we were in camp, as we came into the United States, I always reverted to food to connect me to that place with grandma, to the beautiful farm, with all the animals. And I think that's the flavors, the aromas kind of carried on. And for me, they told the story. And then I continued to tell that story for the rest of my life.
Yeah, but did you, I mean, there was there a point where you said, I'm going to write a cookbook or I'm going to open a restaurant?
Well, that's all, again, you know, Dean, it is a progression of growth and so on. So while I was going here to school, I always, again, worked in bakeries and restaurants. I met my husband who was in the restaurant business. We opened, he was in the front of the house, as they call it, you know, maitre d', in 1971. We got married in 69. In 71, we opened our little restaurant, and that's where we began, the two of us working our way. I wasn't a full-fledged chef, but I worked with the chef in the kitchen for about 10 years. I really honed my skills, and then, you know, this was in the suburbs, and then we sold those. We opened Falidia in New York City. There I became the chef, and there I began cooking really the regional foods of Italy, the food of my history, of my roots. And I think that's where the journalists got interested and began to, they came to see, what is this woman cooking that's different? It's not spaghetti and meatball. Julia Child came, James Pitt came, Julia Child invited me on her show, and I was good. The producer asked me, Lydia, would you like your own show? You're really good, how about it? And so on. You see, these are the opportunities that come as you develop ever more in whatever you're passionate for. And then you take some and some you don't. But, you know, I sort of listened to Julia and my show, and then the book followed because, you know, with a show you need a book and so on. And then the growth of the businesses. So it was a lot of connections and people that really cared and mentored me along the way. And I had a passion. I just wanted to do 1,001 thing, and I still do with food.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting that you say how, you know, you were on Julia Child's show, and their producers took an interest in you, and Julia took an interest with you, because I think, you know, there's such a similarity in the honest passion that you have that, you know, the world loved in Julia Child. You know, same kind of thing. Of plain, you know, a plain talking, interesting, passionate, honest demonstration of whatever the subject matter is on that show.
Well, Dina, you know, she did nurtured me. She did mentor me, and I, you know, what I saw in her, I saw genuine, which was she was genuine in wanting to teach people to cook. She really cared about people getting in the kitchen and cooking. And so she it came through in her lessons. You know, they were simple. They were not about how much she can do or what she can do, but it was about you can do this. And I, you know, I thought to myself, this is where it's at. You know, if I'm going to go on the show, if people are going to give me half an hour of their time, I want to give them something to make their own. I want to give them something that they can take away. So when I am on the show, in my books, my recipes are straightforward, are very doable. Granted, when I'm in the restaurant, that's when I show off, kind of. You know, that's when you you do your fancy recipes. But when I communicate with people, I really want people to get in the kitchen. I really want people to cook because the pleasure, the gift, the connection that the food brings, that a table shared with family and friends with some food on it, there's no better place on earth.
There's the special night with Lydia Bastianich at the Mackinac Arts Center, College of DuPage, on Thursday, November the 9th. I'm going to give you ticket information on all of that in just a moment. And she's also going to be at her Eataly the day before on November 8th. We'll give you some details on that. And Lydia, I have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I just came back from Italy, Croatia, and Greece about 10 days ago. I can't even tell you the number of times I thought about you at every restaurant that I was at in Italy, every marketplace, every place I was thinking, Lydia would like this. Lydia would like a place like this.
Thank you. You had me with you, huh?
Well,
in your thoughts.
Yes, indeed. And we'll come back and talk more with Lydia Bastianich next on 720 WGN. We are back on our Food Time show. Lydia Bastianich is our guest on the phone. She is coming to the Mackinac Arts Center at College of DuPage for a special, it's kind of behind the scenes with Lydia, Thursday, November the 9th. You can get tickets at atthemac.org or by calling 630-942-4000. And you're going to be at Eataly doing a book signing the day before, Lydia, is that right?
I am. I'm going to be at Eataly on the 8th of November from 5 to 7, and I'm going to be signing books there. So if anybody is in the city and wants to get a book signed and say hello and take a picture, I will be there.
All right. So there's plenty of information. Well,
and at the event, which is an intimate conversation with Lydia, there will also be book available, signed books, and opportunity for photos and questions as well. And that is at November 9th at 7 p.m.
Yeah, 7 p.m. We'll repeat all of that information in just a second. So about 10 days ago, Lydia, I just got back from a WGN radio listener cruise that we did that started in Venice. And we went to a couple of places in Italy. We stopped in Split, Croatia, where I had never been before, and then several locations in Greece. But, you know, several days in Venice and one amazing meal after amazing meal. Same in Bari. We visited an olive oil farm in Bari. And, you know, I learned more than I've ever known. I thought I knew about olive oil and choosing olive oil. It turns out I didn't know that much about it at all, but it's a famous region for delicious olive oil.
Absolutely. Bari is the capital of Puglia, and that is the heel of Italy. Now, Italy has 20 regions, so that's one of the 20 regions, and it is the region that produces the largest amount of olive oil in Italy. And they are simple people, great cooking, lots of vegetables and grains and good olive oil.
Well, it was absolutely wonderful. And, you know, and Venice is, well, Venice is Venice. You know, it's the beauty, yeah, and the charm of Venice, but also, you know, again, delicious food and such warm and hospitable people everywhere I went.
Well, Venice, that you're coming into my neck of the woods. You know, there's Venice is the capital of Veneto, and then the region right next, about an hour northeast of Venice, is the region of Friuli Venezia Giulia. And we have a home now. We live there, and we have in Italy, when we are in Italy, and we have our winery in Cividale del Friuli, a little town up there. So an hour north of Venice, you could have been in my home.
Okay, I'm going to take that as an invitation to come there next time I'm there.
Absolutely. you look at the Bastianich winery, and it has a little B&B, 5 rooms, and a little home. You come up there, and we'll cook together.
Oh, I can't even tell you. When I've had the pleasure of cooking with you twice at the WGN TV, it's just a thrill for me because I love your style. I love your approach. I love the simplicity and the deliciousness of everything that you cook. I remember you did a special about how the holidays are celebrated in different parts of the world. And as we are now approaching Thanksgiving and the Christmas season, how does Lydia celebrate the holidays? Do you have traditional things that you like
to
prepare for your family?
Absolutely. You know, we all have our kind of family favorites. Now, Thanksgiving is coming up soon, and I love this holiday because it's, you know, I get a chance, our family gets a chance to really thank and celebrate America because this is an American holiday. And so, you know, having said that, the turkey is beautiful, really American, and I have pumpkin pie, and I have sweet potatoes, but then I add my Italian touches. I brush the turkey in the last 20 minutes with some balsamic vinegar. So the turkey becomes kind of, it has that sweet, tart skin, and it's like a mahogany color.
Right,
it's beautiful.
Right.
And then, of course, some pasta. I'm going to have some baked lasagna, you know, nice platters of baked lasagna. And then the antipasto. So it's a mix. Food is a mix between our traditions and America, but absolutely, you know, the holidays are about, I think, who we are, our traditions, and, you know, I cook, really regional I cook. You know one thing, Dean, my father's no longer with me, and he loved his baccalà mantecato. So Easter comes, and every Christmas Eve, you know, there's the fishes. I make baccalà mantecato. And when I make the baccalà mantecato, I love it. But it feels like my father's with me, like I'm cooking for him. So food does so many things, so many memories, so many emotions. Mix it up, but it's a lot about tradition.
Yeah, you know, when you're talking about that, you could be talking about my family because I recall my Greek grandmother and my mother, you know, proud Americans. They came to America for new life, but you know, but they were still proud of their traditions, and we would have turkey and sweet potatoes and stuffing and all, you know, the all-American Thanksgiving, but there would be the Greek touches that you're talking about. And I'm sure that everyone listening, whatever their ethnicity or their background, their families, their ethnicities got incorporated into this all-American holiday as you're talking.
I have the freedom also to keep my native culture in that mix.
Sure.
Exactly. You know, so that holidays, yes, it's American.
It's Italian.
That's the beauty of America.
Yeah, it's whatever it is, and that's what really makes, to me, that's, you know Chicago well. This is such a melting pot of so many different cultures, and if we can't celebrate, you know, all of those things, it's, you know, it's a shame if we can't. The world is so divided right now. It's anything that we can do to bring things together. This is the kind of conversation that you're going to have at this intimate conversation with Lydia Bastianich at the College of DuPage, the Mackinac Art Center, Thursday, November the 9th. Tickets are available at themac.org or by calling 630-942-4000. The day before, November 8th, she'll be signing her new cookbook that is called Celebrate Like an Italian.
Lydia,
Celebrate Like an Italian. That'll be November 8th. You can get the cookbook signed at either event, at Italy or at the Mackinac Art Center. Lydia, it's always wonderful to talk to you. I'm going to look forward to seeing you when you're in town. Thank you so much for joining us. And it would not be...
Thanks, Dean.
My pleasure. Would not be a conversation with Lydia without ending it with tutti a tavolo a mangiare.
Bravo, Dean.
Was I close with that?
You said that? For a Greek, you said that pretty good.
Lydia, thank you so much.